Hey, this is Dr. Drew, and you are listening to This Life
with Bob Forrest
and Dr. Drew.
Here we are. Here I am, Bob Forrest, with Dr. Drew.
Another episode of This Life, and it's a distinct privilege to welcome our friend.
Our soldier.
Shelly Sprague.
Here
you are.
Hi! So good to be here. So happy to be here. Happy to see you guys.
I know. It's so nice to see you. We never get to see you anymore, even though you're just right up here on the hill. Are you living over this way now, right?
I'm living in Cypress Park. We built a house.
I remember you built that house. You were working on forever.
It's a fancy way of saying Mount Washington.
Oh, Mount Washington. Okay. It was a pain in your ass for the longest time. Did it work out?
Oh, hello. Hello.
And your dad was doing the contracting,
oh,
right?
Oh, hello.
City of Los Angeles Building Commission?
Hello. Oh. I mean, really, people.
And it's all good though, right?
Problems. Oh, yeah, it's great. It's great. I only went around the bend a couple of times.
Uh-oh.
We only almost filed bankruptcy, I don't know, maybe it was two or three times.
Oh, no.
But no, everything's great.
Because the
everything
house?
Everything is so great. Yes. Ugh. Well, we bit off a little tiny bit more than we could chew.
And we say we.
My dad and I.
Oh, yeah. Together you did this.
Yeah, we did this
joint
together.
Joint venture.
It was a joint venture.
Working with family always is pleasant.
It got a little bit dodgy because my dad refused to go deal with the city anymore because he has a little personality, right?
Yeah.
And he's like, I refuse to go down there. You have to do it. Like, I don't know anything about construction. So they were running me all around there. Go to window 3. No, you need to go down to floor 2. No, you need to go back to 6.
It's so
weird. Oh, no, you forgot
silly.
This. I was
what
like,
what is that accomplished?
Build a fucking house.
I've decided,
it
guys.
It keeps you from building a house.
Yeah, I have decided there is an enemy in society, and it's called
bureaucracy.
Oh, yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
Hello. Can I get a witness? That is just that bureaucratic nightmare. I mean, it will literally, I don't know, it was five years, wasn't it? Yeah, it was 5 years. It was 5 years, but now it's
5 years to build a house.
My dad said, yeah, it's,
that's insane when you think about what goes into building a house.
It's insane.
It takes like 3 months to build a house, really.
It's crazy.
A lot of it is getting stuff approved and blah,
everything
blah, blah.
Was getting it approved.
Yeah. And then it seems like the
we had to strong arm the plans guy. We had to come in there and just strong arm him.
And there's so many things that take time.
Make him do
it. You have to get this thing in order before you can get that thing.
But then, you have to finish this. They can come back and review
it. Was
it
like 5 years
it.
At the DMV.
Ugh.
So
now you're up still at PRC. What's your job up
yes.
there?
Yes.
Passing Recovery Center.
I am.
Well, she's been up there the whole time.
I know.
6 years.
Wow.
Six.
And is Mackenzie up there still?
Yes.
Great.
Yes.
Is she talking about more publicly about the evolution of her disease or anything? Is she sharing more about that?
That I don't know because I'm really, really on the front lines. I don't have time to talk about anything.
They got a 15-person caseload over there.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. I mean, I'm a factory worker.
Oh.
Let's face it.
Jesus.
You know, there I do social work. I do dual diagnosis. I do chemical dependency. I do families. I wash the dishes if I have to. I'm literally everything.
This is the modern mechanisms of Obamacare.
Oh,
I know.
Goodness.
Believe me, I know that.
I am literally, I feel like I'm a riveter.
Are more people gaining access to treatment?
Yeah, for sure they are.
Yeah, definitely. But again, you know, it's about the motivation of the person.
Yeah.
I can treat people all day long.
This is your dopamine theory again.
I'm telling you. Look at my necklace. Mackenzie gave this to me. What is this, Drew?
That's a dopamine molecule.
That's right.
Oh, my God. You're kidding me.
Dopamine molecule. I am not joking.
Oh, my God.
I am not joking. I have decided that everything comes down to this molecule.
There's something a little off about it, though.
Is
I can't quite figure out
that's
what
it
is.
Oh, great.
Yeah. But
oh,
that's
great.
What 6 years of working with drug addicts, 15 a day, will do to you.
My life has become one neurotransmitter.
That's so funny.
It's all boiled down to
that. Well, but it's all about motivation, right?
Completely.
Everything. So how do you change? Einstein mm-hmm. quoted Schopenhauer once with a mm-hmm. quote that I love. And I don't know if Schopenhauer even said it, but he attributed it to Schopenhauer.
Schopenhauer, the great philosopher.
Yes, he said, a man can do whatever he wants. He just can't will what he wants.
True.
So your wants and desires, your motivations, you can't will your motivations.
You can't.
So how do you change motivation? That is the.
Well,
that
I
is
try
the,
to scare them first.
Okay, so
I use the scare tactics.
You're going
to
die.
You're going to die. Or you're going to. Yeah,
that
you're
doesn't
die.
Work. Then what?
No. Sometimes that
Incarceration's
works.
Incarceration's more Sometimes scary than dying.
Okay, so for antisocial.
And then somebody really doesn't want to be told what to do.
Right.
He'd rather die than be told what to do.
Oh, for sure I would. For sure. Exactly. Is there a question in that?
No, I better change something.
Well. I can ease them into it. I can charm them into it. I can do a tap dance. I can stand on my head. But at the end of the day,
you get the money cut off.
Yeah, but they'll just find some other way. These kids aren't afraid to.
When you say kids, what's the average age now?
I'm looking at people who basically at that facility is like 18 to 25.
Isn't that crazy,
that's mostly what you're doing now.
Yeah.
Wow.
Isn't that crazy?
That's not a typically motivated population.
That's the whole population of drug treatment in America.
Yep. 18 to 25?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Well, and is it mostly they get going on pills or what?
Yep. The exact thing that I'm going to tell
you. They start on pills and then they're doing heroin probably only for not even a year
even
by
a
the
year,
time they go to treatment.
But they're shooting it. Lightweight. And they don't know what they're doing. And they're dying.
Of what?
Overdoses because they don't know what they're doing. Bob, remember when we got clean? Remember nobody would even show us how to do it.
Right.
Nobody would even show us. We had to like beg to find out
how to learn how
to
shoot up.
People were like, no, we're not giving you heroin.
I had to find girls that knew how to do it already.
Right. We had to find people. You couldn't just go to the internet and find out how to do all of these things.
Right.
You know, you had to get down into
the muscle. You had to meet people.
So it sounds like
you're scrunching up your face? No, that's the truth. That's the same thing I was saying.
You're misreading me today a whole bunch. Okay. I was scrunching my face because it sounds like that would be harder than it would be then today. So why are they getting
high? Absolutely.
No, that they should know more about. Why are they more clueless?
Well, they're more clueless because they don't have a hierarchy in their little junkie world.
There's no mentors of junkies.
There's no people.
So they don't know what to trust. They just go to the internet and do whatever.
We haven't talked about this, and this is exactly what I was talking about. When I was OD, my eyes were rolling back in my head at the Club Lingerie in 1983. Top Jimmy walked up to me.
He's
and
old school.
Slapped me as hard as you can slap a person in the face and goes, "What the fuck are you doing, Bob?"
Yeah.
That's an old junkie saying, "You don't fucking do that." There's nobody doing that to these kids. There was a junkie code, Drew.
There was.
I'm telling you.
There really was. I couldn't even get dope for years because I was too young and they didn't want
to
give it to
me
because they knew what was going to happen to me if I did.
So who are the suppliers now that are so liberal with it?
Big pharma.
No. I know that's where it gets going. But once they get to heroin.
Well, once they've experienced it, they're going to do it.
Yeah, they're done.
We're talking about exposure. How did somebody who comes from a middle class background from Orange County and Downey end up junkies in Hollywood? You had to seek that out, and you had to be kind of allowed in and taught.
Mm-hmm.
And nobody's teaching. There's just get on Vicodin because you hurt your leg playing football. And the next thing you know, you're smoking heroin. And the next thing you know, you're shooting heroin because you know how to go on the internet and find out how to do it. There's no structure anymore. Make sense of what we're telling you, Drew.
I'm trying to. I know it makes junkie sense.
There was
we had no access to pills, number one. Okay,
right.
So that was off the table.
Right.
Could you get a triplicate script?
No,
Bob?
I could get Black Beauty. So
yeah.
Would you even have thought about it?
No. That's the first time we had, I'll say his name, Pat W. at Los Encinas was one of the first prescription drug addicts I knew. Old guy that I knew from junkiedom, right? Uh-huh. He's on pills. I'm like, what the fuck? Why would you even go to rehab if you're on pills?
Yeah.
That was my reaction in 2004.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It doesn't even make sense to know that it's more
deadly, more destructive, and that it's brought to you by Walgreens, CVS, and Merck. It's insane what this country has become.
But there's a weird thing that people believe that doctors are getting paid to prescribe opiates or something weird.
Of course.
They don't.
That's what they're saying. No, they don't, but they get paid by the patient when they run out.
Suboxone visits.
Hold on a second. What do you mean pay by the patients?
Well, because $500 the patients.
Well, they get a visit. They get a visit.
They charge $500 cash, Drew.
Some of them just charge their Medicare rate. And
yes,
that's it.
Some do.
So the question is, how do you create a busy practice if you're untalented and not good? I can treat pain. Treat pain. Well, I don't mean everybody treats pain as untalented and not good, but I mean that's what people do. They
no,
get
but
the
most of
population.
Them aren't pain management doctors.
I'm seeing.
Listen. They go to GPs up in Sierra Madre, and they just dole out the pills.
Right.
And they have...
See, the one's going to prison now.
Yeah, thank goodness, because this is just absolutely an outrage.
Right. Believe me, she did not make anything from drug companies.
No, I don't think...
Not one thing.
No, she was making money in her private practice off the gate.
Yeah, she was just seeing quarterly, hourly wages and was charging per visit, and that's that. Now, the Suboxone story is more pernicious, if you ask me. Because they got in with the National Institute on Drug Abuse, and they got them to sign on board, and they funded the research. That's how shit happens.
There's a doctor I know that has three clinics, 500, 600, 700 patients per clinic per month, $500 a head.
For what?
That's a lot. To get Suboxone. The visit to get your Suboxone redone.
That's ridiculous.
That's going on all over the city, Drew.
It's insane.
That's a lot of money.
Plenty of people are doing it just for their copay, believe me.
And what's that, $45?
$3, $10, you know, it depends.
Definitely.
No.
But here's
I get $36 a visit.
Oh, my God. I know. It's so bad.
And I have to document. I have to show how I documented that I spent 15 minutes there, and I'll have to do 10 minutes of paperwork.
Yes.
To get the 15-minute payment.
So maybe there's good doctors that are going, fuck that. I'll just see patients for private pay through an urgent care or whatever.
No, through their own place.
Through their practice. Yeah.
A lot of my clients get their pills from urgent cares. I don't know how. I've never asked that deeply.
They just know the right thing to say. Mm-hmm. Urgent care has got to move people. Yeah, it's got to move people through. And your pain is so bad.
And they have a mentality at urgent cares where they need to treat people automatically, very quickly, and move them through.
It's an emergency, and they get paid top dollar for it, and they need patient satisfaction surveys.
Yes.
And, you know,
it is very important to treat.
You know that you can go in Santa Ana, not Santa Ana, Van Nuys, on Van Nuys Boulevard, Drew, and go to seven pain urgent cares going up the boulevard from the courthouse.
We're tickling our own sort of misery with this, but we're boring everybody with this.
Let me tell you what I've decided that Suboxone is good for.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. I've figured this out.
Because it is good for something.
It is good for something. Okay, so I've figured it out. People who have chronic pain and cannot do anything about it due to whatever conditions they have, I think that's a good medicine.
I totally agree.
I think that's a very good medicine. And I also think that it is good for people who are pre-contemplative for recovery and contemplative for recovery, but they need to be told that. They need to be told that, okay, you're not ready yet for this type of treatment, but they're selling it as it's a better treatment, a more effective treatment, a lifelong treatment. And that's a lie. That's just a lie. So I say I can use it for saying, okay, this person's not ready for recovery.
Will it delay them getting ready?
I don't think so. Because the receptors are wide open. They're still acting out in the same behaviors.
Okay.
None of them get their life together on it. So it's just a way, it's just another avenue, I think, to exhaust now that they've kind of put up another roadblock for us to exhaust that option.
See, I think it delays.
Okay.
But it's a lot safer.
That's what I think.
It's a lot safer.
Do you remember the HBO special about addiction in America, the Volkoff, that was way behind, pushing the idea of Suboxone, maybe this is the future.
Yep.
The example they gave was a young man about 20 years old, 22 years old. He had a girlfriend. He worked in a fast food thing as a fry cook, right? That's what they were saying was success through Suboxone, right?
Yep.
You can do that being on heroin.
You
know what I mean?
Yes.
Well, some people can. But
what you're getting at is what is recovery.
That was the best example of Suboxone success they could find to put on HBO.
Right. Well, magically.
Because there are no success stories on Suboxone.
Well, you'll notice no professionals are on Suboxone.
No doctors, no lawyers.
And I get into.
No jet fighter pilots.
I cannot tell you how bad this has become in our field. It has become a nightmare. It's become so bad and such a struggle that I can't even work with doctors anymore.
Yeah.
I can't even work with them because you know what they say? That I'm wrong, that I can't be who I am or stay sober without Suboxone, that there's something seriously different about me and these other people could never achieve what I've achieved. And I'm wrong, and I'm in a cult, and I don't know what I'm talking about.
There you go.
And I don't know anything. And
you're not a doctor.
I'm not a doctor, and these people are telling me this stuff, and let me tell you, it's really difficult to tolerate. I'm like, I'm going to put my hands on you.
That's why I'm not doing it anymore.
So let me,
I get it. I totally get it.
So what we need is if there are Suboxone, lifelong Suboxone success stories, we need those people to step out of the secrecy and say, I've been on Suboxone for 20 years, and I'm a state senator, and it's working for me, but nobody even wants to do that, Drew, let alone that doctors, lawyers, airline pilots, police officers are not allowed to be on it and perform their duties as a job. We have nobody in society saying, hey, I'll be the poster child for Suboxone success. How come that is if it's the greatest drug in addiction history?
I don't know.
Where are the studies?
Oh, there's lots of studies.
Okay.
There's lots of studies. But it's outcomes and what are the
outcomes? Yeah, what are the outcomes?
And there's flawed.
How many times you use in a calendar year is one that I saw.
Well, there's flawed in addiction studies generally. It's, you know, they don't have endpoints of sobriety. It's always reduced.
Right.
They often rely on the patient reporting.
Oh.
They typically lose track of 3/4 of the patients.
Not surprising.
And their time horizons are very short.
Right. Their success rate is 1 year.
4 months, full 6 months. Yeah.
Full remission, one year.
And so it brings in the really serious question is, what is recovery?
Mm-hmm.
And what are we aiming for? What do we want for our patients? And I think the three of us have always wanted to at least be able to offer the possibility of a flourishing life.
A completely flourishing whatever life. You want to do the work, you can become.
Yeah.
That's what we want to tell people because I think it's true.
I mean, look at Jason Waller, look at Shelley. I mean, it's
possible. This guy Don I saw at the store last night.
Now, it's hard and now it's not for everybody, but the fact that we are going to throw that away.
I think it sells people very, very short and it tells them the wrong message about themselves.
I agree.
I think it's under-supportive.
Yeah.
And I think selling them out to, you have to just take this and that's as good
as it's
going to get
for you. What's wrong with trying to
taper
them off? Really working to taper them off. They're so fearful of the patients being uncomfortable.
I know. I hear this all the time. We don't want them to suffer.
Oh, that's our society, though.
We don't
that's
want
how we
them
got
to
into
suffer.
This. We got into this mess to begin with. So your back hurts. I don't give a fuck. So does mine.
Yeah, I know.
Mine
you
does
know what
too.
I mean? But somehow we got to take drugs
couch.
Now. But that's all of America now. It's all of America. So here's what I think is happening. The true real
as
recovery, what
it.
You call real recovery, is happening and actuating in a more cult-like way than I would like, around Jason, around me, around Shelley.
Oh.
It's weird. Mm-hmm. And that power or that influence you have in other people's lives, you have to respect it.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's frightening because it can go to that guy Chris who had that recovery program here that the LA Weekly did the article about.
And what
people,
happened?
Well, they started taking advantage financially, sexually.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're going to create these cults of personality based on real recovery, which is based on inspiration, it's very much like a religion almost. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do. I understand it.
So the responsibility of the elders, I call them, Donald, to me it was Gloria Scott, Buddy Arnold, Donald Madden, they taught me well, they taught Earl Hightower well, and we teach, and it just carries on, right?
No, and it's ultimately about being willing to maintain boundaries. And people in authority don't maintain boundaries.
Well, it's difficult because people don't like boundaries, Drew.
I know.
Do they?
No,
they don't. Takes 3 months for someone to tolerate a boundary that's new.
But I imitate Drew sometimes. I just did it last week. So my house manager moved out of my sober living. I thought, well, I'll oversee it for a while. Those guys are doing good. They're all good guys. They'll do the right thing. And there was nobody living there for 2 days.
Okay.
They had girls spending the night, crazy shit going on. The outpatient calls me.
Oh, my goodness.
I go marching in there like, what the fuck is wrong with you guys? And they're looking at me like this, the first time they ever saw me mad.
Yeah.
And it's just, I kind of overdid it like that's you right. do sometimes.
That's right. It's a perfect. It's a therapeutic intervention.
They've been so scared for like a week.
I love this therapeutic intervention. Where can I get them?
You know, you got to raise that voice Shelly, like our dad.
Shelly does it with, you're going to die, you're going to die.
Yes.
All right, we got to take a quick break. Be right back.
Okay. Bye-bye.
I'd like to introduce you all to our latest sponsor. It is the Rocky Mountain Treatment Center. They're in Montana. And if you've been listening to anything that Bob and I have been talking about over the years, you know that we're very particular about an addiction treatment. We don't take recommendations lightly, so we've looked into these guys pretty carefully. And the Rocky Mountain Treatment Center happens to be one I am able to recommend, and I'm happy to do so. They focus on individualized treatment of the patients, including their entire well-being based on a biopsychosocial model. This is what Bob and I have done for years and years. They don't just look at addiction. They look at the psychiatric issues, the psychological issues, the trauma issues, all aspects of the physical and mental health. And of course, you've heard me stress the importance of this for long-term success. There's staying sober, but there's what I call real recovery, which is dealing with all the risk factors that set people up for bad addiction. They're in Great Falls, Montana. It's a 26-bed facility surrounded by amazing Montana landscape. Patients can have a range of recreational therapies, including equine therapy. For more information on Rocky Mountain Treatment Center, click on their banner on the thislifepodcast.com website or at drdrew.com or visit their site at rocky.rehab. That is simply rocky.rehab.
And we're back, Drew.
Hey, man, what's happening?
Okay, so this is the deal. We're going to do Celebrity Rehab. That's why we got Shelly here. We're going to do it again, Shelly.
No way.
We're going to do it in Laguna Beach.
We're going to
do it in Laguna Beach. Laguna.
Okay.
Too far. We'll get you a town car to pick you up in the morning.
That'll work. All right.
Okay. But we're going to do it because America needs it.
They do? What do they need do. This time? What do they need?
Because we've got to get out here and talk about what we just talked about. Now more so than ever. Now more than
we
7 years
shout
ago.
We from the rooftops.
We're going to say that real recovery is possible.
Yeah, because we're still doing it, Bob.
And the
we're
problem
the least
of,
likely to succeed.
I figured out the economic problem, which is we associate with a treatment center that gives the aftercare that you and I oversee so we don't have to do it all 24 hours a day.
Okay.
There
well,
you
I
go.
Was like
done
like,
deal, like Jason
like
Waller.
Oh,
I still think
yes.
we have to do the the initial thing here, though.
Why is that? Because it's close to your house.
It's the only way. It's the only way I can schedule it. But also, they know
how to do it.
How to do the production part?
Yeah, they know how to
it's
do
all
it.
Set up.
You've got it. All right, use your brain to figure out how to get PR for the place that really does all the treatment,
which is Jason's place.
Yes,
you mean the Laguna Beach thing?
Yes.
Well, we'll go down there and show them and talk about it and have a whole segment.
Maybe it's half and half. Maybe it's five episodes, six episodes.
You could
of
do
PRC
a sober
and
house.
Five or six.
Yeah,
there.
You can do the continual.
Let's do the whole journey over 12 episodes.
Yeah,
12 episodes.
Good with that. What we could do though is sort of maybe take like a 2 month break and then go back in and do a sober house. You know, see how they're
later,
doing.
Later,
kind of
yeah.
Maybe
give them
time.
A little more treatment before they're ready
so,
to do that.
Susan was my wife was interested in how you experienced Celebrity Rehab. What was it like for you?
Well, first of all, very steep learning curve. Very steep. First of all, I am not a camera person. I don't like to be in front of the camera. So that whole aspect took me about 72 hours to even come into my body and be present because I really did not know how to do that at all. And
but there was nothing to do except just
learn to tolerate it. Yeah. But it was very hard for me to tolerate that. I really am very not in front of the camera kind of person.
Yeah.
So that was difficult. And then the learning curve about the patients coming in, their motivation, how it was skewed, how then we became, you know, these sort of people where they started to split us, right? And Drew was the popular one, so it was easy to split me out all the time.
Shelly's the bad one.
And so I was the bad one. Now, that's okay. I'm not trying to win popularity contests, but when, you know, over time, everybody
it wears on you.
Splits you as the... you know, the demon, and then he's like the savior, then, you know,
it's like at home.
That's
said.
Just what happens. Oh, it's like at home. Okay, Susan. So we have a lot to talk about. Not on
But one of the things I noticed that got off the bat wrong is Shelley really isn't that person.
I know.
But she was that person, and she became that person because that's what we needed.
But, well, to be...
We needed Barry is what we needed, and we got Shelley to be Barry.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm a little cuter.
Yeah, quite a bit.
Sorry.
Tiny bit cuter than Barry.
But
not as good at taking
the
fire, right? Yeah. He had so much better of a style. But I'm much better now.
Are you?
Oh, yes.
But do you remember there's stuff that people didn't see? You ever walking down the street with me?
Yes, because I was coming unglued. You know, I am recovering, Susan. You know.
Yeah,
like,
I know.
I am recovering. Like, I'm not, just FYI, like, I'm not wrapped as tightly as Dr. Drew. Okay? Let's just face that right now. All right? I'm just not. So what he could handle is some, like, you know, I'm like tip of the iceberg to compare to what you've seen and what you could handle. I was very affected because I didn't have my chops. You know, I wasn't prepped for that heavy artillery that they were coming at me, right?
Yeah, and they were sick. They were super duper sick.
Oh, my gosh. They were so sick and so manipulative and so access to you.
But
you can look that up if you want. And it was so difficult because I didn't have those chops.
Let's
you know,
go back, though. My concern initially, that before we even did the first season, was they're not going to talk on television. They're not going to be assholes. They're not going to do what we know addicts do in treatment because of the cameras. And from the get-go, that was not true. They're fucking going to be drug addicts or drug addicts or drug addicts. Doesn't matter whether there's cameras or not.
Yeah.
And that just surprised me. It really did.
That didn't surprise me.
It didn't?
No.
I think everybody gets used to it. I mean, I got used to the camera.
Yeah,
look at me.
Right. You know, right. She hated it, didn't like it. And so anybody gets used to it. But my thing was, I kept telling everybody, just don't worry about it.
It's going to be fine.
Stuff happens. You have to do anything. Just let us do our job.
Oh, my clinical floor is as bizarre and crazy as that on a daily basis.
Yeah.
The female side, hello.
Is that primarily what you do, the female side?
I do both sides, but I mean, our clinical floor is crazy. It's all the same. It's all exactly the same as what you saw
on TV,
on television.
But not famous people with no cameras.
Right. No cameras, exactly the same. People are sneaking into each other's rooms. People are trying to get their cell phones. People are trying to keep their cell phone. I had a kid give me a fake, like cardboard thing with a battery pack in it to trick me into thinking he gave me his phone. Like, I'm talking like they're really serious about this.
God,
it's so
wearing to do this constantly.
Now I just laugh. Policing, and I'm like, nice work. Nice work. Yeah. You almost got away with it, kid. Better luck next time. All right, we're moving on.
Imagine how police actually feel.
Oh, well,
I think that's how we feel a little bit. We get to see the worst and the most animosity.
Yeah, on that front lines. But it's the same. The outcomes, Drew, the outcomes for celebrity rehab are exactly the same as in real life.
Oh, of course.
Some people die, some people get better, the same stuff.
Yeah.
Same motivations. Same difficulty with families. Same difficulty with getting them to do what they needed to do. Same difficulty.
And so let's get to a point that I get criticized a lot from the 12-step world is treatment really has no effect on drug addicts.
Oh.
Motivation is what creates willingness, which if you just go to AA, you'll be fine. You don't need to go to rehab. What do you say to that, Dr. Drew?
While everyone knows I'm a fan of 12-step, and it's the data is clear. It has a tremendous impact on the outcomes for addicts.
Amen.
It's often not the whole. You got to get them. You got to make them. My feeling is you have to get them in position where 12-step is possible, where they
agreed.
You know that if you're just going to let anybody just trickle in when they're ready, you're going to lose a lot of people that you could have gotten in.
Yeah.
Motivational interviewing, CBT. Just connecting to Shelley, looking at her dopamine necklace.
but we don't ideally do things right. And let's look at it from a different perspective. So once we know a client for 2 or 3 weeks just needs to go to 12-step and just be sober, we rarely discharge them to 12-step. Those that are resistant.
We always just. He means just 12-step.
No, if they're paid, they're going to stay until they're done paying. Let me just be honest. Then there's the people we know are going to benefit. None should be out using and suffering because this is not, they're just ruining this for everyone else.
Okay.
They're never discharged because they're paying.
Because you can't. Professionally, you can't. No, it's because they're paying.
You can't
take that liability.
Mm-mm.
You can't say, You can tell the person, I don't think you're done, but we'll continue to struggle with you. But you can't say, get out of here, because it's my opinion. You're dangerously sick. I ain't going to treat you. That's against the law.
Totally against the law. I have to come up with, I have
you can kick anybody out of rehab
AMA.
In 2 seconds.
You can
no,
refer
you
them to other rehabs.
You have to refer them out, Drew. I
the
mean,
Salvation Army.
No, you
the
can't
Salvation
just say,
Army.
No,
not
because
if that's
you
the,
can't, you gotta, no, because be you a, can't get an appointment.
And it's got to be the appropriate level of care. Clean. Yeah, they have to be prepared.
They have to have medications yep. for it to for send transfer. Someone to Salvation Army, just, you know, that program. They have to have 3 months of medication ahead of time.
Yeah.
They won't even take them. If they have anything in their system,
they won't
take them.
But the point is, it has to be referral, appropriate referrals.
All right. So they're referred to a place they can't afford. It's true.
But if you sabotage them,
it's patient dumping. It happens all the time.
I get the dumping patients on me, and I figure it out. I have to figure it out. I have to figure out what we're going to do with these guys.
Yeah.
Because I don't. That's it doesn't matter to me. If they're motivated or they're not motivated, they're still a patient.
Right. You have a,
and
you have a job
to
do.
Be treated.
Right.
No. Well, I'm just saying there's the people who really should be in treatment are the contemplative people.
Mm-hmm.
The people who are resistant and don't want anything to do with it. And after a few weeks, you realize there's nothing they're benefiting from this. And they're harming other people with their opposition to change
yeah.
or compliance.
Right.
They're never kicked out anymore.
Truthfully, why aren't they stepped up to a higher level of care? Go to Impact, something like that.
Because they're not
they're
meeting
not
criteria.
Motivated. They have criteria of motivation criteria. At CryHelp and Impact.
Yeah, they do have real serious criteria. We get all the people who are, you know, unmotivated and, you know, pre-contemplative and resistant, and we get those guys. But I don't think that it's all for nothing, Bob. Like,
no,
I don't think
I'm saying
think
the
it's
contemplative people are the people who interest me, because that's where you can do your work and you can try to help them along the way.
The resistant
over 3 months
ones interest me, because that's the big challenge, is breaking down that resistance and mm-hmm. finding some motivation.
It does ruin it for all the rest of the people. And then you lose some of the other people. They'll discharge because they don't want to be around it.
Well, if they, you know, if you can't maintain, if you...
You just need more structure.
Right. If you develop a toxic environment, that's, again, people like me have to solve that problem.
Right.
Well, we do with celebrity rehab. How many people on celebrity rehab would have been kicked out?
Several.
Lots of
right?
them.
Oh, look at this kid. There he is.
It's Rudy.
What's going on?
Holmes? What's happening, Holmes?
Hello.
Grab a mic.
How are you?
She's so happy.
I'm so happy.
Shelly loves Rudy.
Come on, eh?
Hey, what's up, Hina? I like your hair that color.
Hey, doesn't it look good?
Reminds me of my mom's. She used to dye it all, like, but she had red streaks, you know, like, you know, to keep it
yeah.
looking. Like.
I'm going to work on that for the next time.
And hers was, like, a little crunchier, like,
yeah,
a little, you know, crispier.
Yeah, a little crispier. More Aquanet. Yeah.
Crispier. Yeah.
We're not wearing that kind of
You've never seen these two together, Bob.
I have. We did
seen
something
Rudy
together,
okay.
yeah.
Was it Rudy or was it?
Yeah, Rudy, okay. I love lines or something.
Okay, right.
I know. Well, I live in Cypress Park, eh?
Órale. It's like, keep it real.
That's
I
right.
like that.
I
bet, like, one of these days when I get off work, I could come visit, you know, maybe bring some, like, some poppers.
You might cause her to relapse, Rudy.
Some mango juice. I heard that's not like a, it doesn't trigger the same
yeah, it
shit up
All
in
it
her
does
dome.
Is kill brain cells. It doesn't really stimulate
it just
dopamine.
Explodes them.
But we were talking about
it kills brain cells and buttholes, dog. That's what it does. That's what it does, fool.
Yeah, baby.
That's right.
So
we're far yes. afield. So Rudy, are you contemplating sobriety? That's what we heard.
Like I've already cut out like all the real drugs, but like, you know, I still smoke the Yesca, dog, you know, because I gotta keep my head right.
No Sherman that though.
No. I don't dip my cigarettes no more, dog. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't smoke the wet. I don't like no more.
Why? No more. Why do you not smoke it?
Because like now I'm trying to keep my life, you know, in line. Now that I feel like I got a second chance.
He's got a job and he's getting working.
You know, since I got out of the pen, I was telling Drew like the last day before I got out, the Virgin Mary came to my pen, my cell, dog, and she talked to me. She's like, Rudy, you gotta like make good on, you know, on all the stuff that you've done wrong, and like you gotta like make amends with your family because you abandoned them. And you're being just like your father who abandoned you. And I was like, damn. I was like, this bitch.
That's real.
She like only comes out to give me bad news. Like, she's really depressing.
She's Virgin Mary understands Virgin intergenerational Mary. Transmission of trauma. Repetition compulsion.
Wow, how does she know this?
Well, because
she's all knowing.
She's Jesus' mother, isn't she?
Oh, that's right. She should know things.
Yeah, and so like she understands trauma because she had to explain to her son that like he has no father.
Oh yeah,
like you know, just like me, because her father, her son's father was God, and he didn't like he
didn't come down. Like,
he stick around.
He wasn't there.
And then she had to say like she had to say like, hey, you're Jewish, and eventually there's gonna be a bunch of vatos come and beat you up and hang you,
right?
And that's gonna suck.
That's gonna really suck.
Like, I can't imagine saying that to my kids. Like, hey, eventually people for no reason are gonna like put hammer hands to a cross.
Ooh,
that would suck.
Nasty. Yeah. That's
gonna be good. Christmas, such trauma.
Dark.
I was cutting limes for Coronas like at a Raider game in '86, mm-hmm. and I cut my finger right here, mm-hmm. and that was bad. I can't imagine like a big nail.
Ow,
like,
right? A nail right through the middle of your hand.
Holding your body weight up by a cross.
Oh my God.
It's good motivation for a diet though.
Yeah, yeah.
You'd be like, I better lay off the chilaquiles if I'm going to be hanging by my hand.
So we were talking about motivation. I want to get back to motivation a little bit because that to me fascinates me. You know, how do you get people? Because we were talking about patients we did or didn't like talking.
Doesn't
creating.
Kicking unmotivated clients out motivate them to maybe be willing?
Yeah,
that's
there are
the
people,
point.
There are people that
so
have.
So how many people on Celebrity Rehab should we have kicked out? Jason Davis for sure.
Yeah, that was the one thing.
But he had that arm thing. He had the. Like, he was, the
look
he
at
had
you two codependents.
No,
look
but,
at you. Shelly
no,
Sprague, codependent.
No. We needed to send him to a different facility.
Yeah. His diabetes and stuff was.
That
a mess.
Was gnarly.
Okay,
he had a lot of physical problems.
Yeah. Who else?
See how good I've learned
but
through?
Sending,
I've been on the front lines.
Kicking
I know
out
this.
Unmotivated.
Oh,
patients.
My catheter just
hey,
came
what's
in.
Happening? Yeah.
Oh, hey, there you are,
me,
buddy.
Rudy handed me the microphone.
Is he out of here, eh?
I think he went to the bathroom to blaze.
Yeah. not our house.
In Dr.
Drew's home. Can you imagine? Yeah. Kicking out unmotivated patients back to an unsupportive environment.
No bueno.
Is probably not going to motivate them.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying?
Doesn't using in the face of adverse consequence. Create the motivation to change to be sober.
I don't know because it's so hard. Motivation's a funny thing in recovery because I don't know about you guys, but the adverse consequences
in my life
had bared no like they didn't have any motivation for me.
Didn't get through them. He had multiple near deaths.
You know what I'm saying? Like the worst
Look
times
you,
of my
Bob.
Life. The worst
that
times of my
help
life.
You
that,
at all.
The trip to
somebody
jail.
Somebody telling him what to do. That's when he had it.
Yeah. Rehab, which that's rehab it. Did all the time.
He had the stinkers.
But you needed some CO officers.
So I don't want to project like that's everyone's experience, but really bad consequences never seemed to have any effect on my motivation to get clean. It was some weird kind of
unknowable
existential moment, you know?
So
in
the big book of AA, of which all of this is based on, it says, if you don't like what we're talking about, if you don't believe what we're saying, it doesn't say go try to be sober on your own. It says go drink, considering what we have told you and talked about.
Mm-hmm.
So the false
since we've gotten off of the main motivation of the 20th century of alcohol without treating alcoholism, that no longer exists.
Mm-hmm.
That's why you have what you have. That's my opinion.
What is this trifecta you speak of?
The trifecta is in the biopsychosocial spiritual model of human beings. There has to be three at the same time, three bottoms. Not one, not two, but three. So you have to hit a bottom.
Triple anal, you're saying. Three bottoms.
Three bottoms.
Back to poppers.
Triple anal. Mm. Three bottoms. Exactly. That breaks through a portion of the denial system. Mm. Somehow it has to be three areas of your life though, because just regular consequences, not a big deal. So, go to jail, you adapt.
So social,
the brain adapts.
Needs to be social, biological, and
something else.
Spiritual.
Professional. I bet professional
or
too
emotional.
Plays a big role. Yeah. If that doesn't count as social.
It does.
I've noticed that people sometimes get their denial dropped a little bit when they develop a new kind of connection with another person.
Really?
Like a intimacy, not necessarily mm-hmm. not a romantic intimacy. Just right. often people say, oh, "I was hanging out," because I examined people that had a sudden turnaround. What?
Think about that, Louisa.
Yeah.
Giving birth.
Yeah.
Mothers stop using without 12 steps, or when they know they become pregnant. I know you disagree.
No,
but the
no,
percentage
I know they do
of
sometimes.
Women that do sometimes. Stop and stay stopped in that first year of the birth of the child is that needs to be looked at.
Maybe that's just
brain chemistry.
Well, it could be just brain chemistry, but I've wondered that. But it could be a new kind of connection again.
Yes, that's why I pointed to you.
New brain chemistry.
There's yes, no really... Yes.
Boys don't have that, Rudy. Yes.
Oh, that's right. I remember...
Children
members,
out of our bodies.
You guys don't know what happened to his wife. His wife... Well, explain what happened to
like,
Beth.
When I got out of the pen, dog, like, you know, she was... There was a lot more woman there than I remember.
Oh,
like,
my God.
And, like, she was having trouble. She was trying to... She did the Atkins and...
Really?
Like the Weight Watchers, you know, and like
Roomba,
and she did it all, and like she was not losing weight, she was getting bigger. So I was like secretly putting meth in her food.
Did that work?
And yeah, she lost like 109 pounds.
Her horchata,
yeah, and her horchata. She was like, "Oh, this horchata is so good. I'm gonna go clean the house." And like it was working. It was working crazy good. But then
the house was clean.
She chopped off her leg. She chopped off her leg because she thought there were bugs in it.
Right.
So I mean, that's one downside. But like, she's got crutches.
Well, you know, you figure it out.
It's like I look at it this way: if I put it on like the scale. Of like
it's
of
way
like,
better now.
It's like a thin wife with no leg, or like a fat wife with both legs. I'll take the thin wife with no leg any day.
Yeah,
you know?
It's a lot lighter.
Maybe cut off another. You know.
Yeah.
You had no homosexual things going to prison, did you?
Well, I had a lot.
So his
I had a couple relationships, dog.
No,
did
no.
You really?
Oh, you had one cellmate.
My big cellmate Trucha.
Is like, that just gay in jail type thing?
It's like. I'll put it this way, Bob Forrest. It's like some of us are different. You know what I'm saying? And like, when it comes to like sex, dog, like I'm open-minded. That's
oh, my God.
That.
That's
well, but he was raped in prison.
Well,
right? The first
that's
time was
right.
Rape.
But like I look at it like like Stockholm butthole, you know? like Stockholm syndrome, but for my butt. Because like it was like trauma. But
you
then like
adapt.
I learned to sympathize
with
my
with
butt
trout.
Trauma.
With Trout. Trucha.
Trucha made like he became my friend, like all connected.
Oh
and
God.
Then like I get like butterflies in my tummy when he would smash my face into the bed bed and then do bad things.
Trauma wiring.
Yeah, give me the
trauma
inside
wiring.
Out culo.
Rewiring, baby.
Rewiring the brain.
He had some anatomical problems as a result.
So
too.
Mike, so
wait,
you,
hold on.
Did Mike
hold
just
on.
Go to the bathroom?
Yeah.
You know, did you leave a line in there for him?
He stood up. He's walking. He's like, you know,
okay.
My wife and I, I'm back, by the way, guys.
Oh,
my
God.
Wife and I, who's here today, she, we were talking about how messy our house was because of the baby. Like, things get out of place.
You're going to put Bianca on meth. That's what you're
no,
gonna
no, 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 no,
no. Oh,
hello,
no.
If anything, I'd put Bianca on Quaaludes or something. The last thing she needs is a stimulant. We were talking about how like messy things had gotten, and like, it really was bugging us.
Was it bugging her or was it bugging you? Because it seems like you're a real anal guy.
It was bugging her outwardly. It was bugging me too. It was bugging me too. But
dude, you like things perfect, don't you?
In some ways, yes, but in other ways, no.
Cars and clothes.
Yes. Yeah. No. Exactly. And totally. And I don't like when my plans, when someone throws a wrench in the plans. And
rigid.
I've kind of gotten, I had to get used to her doing that. Like, I just set aside 40 extra minutes to be late.
Okay, yeah.
But we were talking about how gross things were and how much it was bugging us. And it was just because, like, the bed was unmade or there was clothes on the floor. And I thought back to when I was using and how much infinitely more gross I was. Like, I was a gross person. Like, I used to do blow in public toilets on the toilet.
It builds your immune system.
You know what I'm like but like grown sober Mike would I used to pee the bed so much that I just instead of thinking, you know what, I have a problem,
mattress
I better
pad.
Lay bed, I went and got old people sheets, the
right.
rubber ones.
What else would
so
you
it
do?
Was just like Febreze and flips.
That's right.
Well, that's what we were talking about, is how do you motivate people to see through all that and be willing to do
something? I don't know if you can. I think it's three things that have to crumble.
So maybe something serendipitous in the brain chemistry is what you're saying.
Yes.
Something social consequence, a loss.
See, I think the social consequence has to happen, but it has to involve other people. Because we as addicts are incredibly selfish, but yet don't care about ourselves in any way,
right,
which is the weirdest combo. Mm-hmm. So if you go to jail, you get
your
leg amputated because of a car wreck.
Who cares?
If you happen to accidentally in a DUI drive over someone, you're going to get clean. If you I think those social
One client I had that did that did not get clean over that.
That's well, then crazy.
Well,
maybe
he or
she.
He did for a while. Yes, we had the same client. Yeah. Oh,
maybe he or she did.
I used to work with Dr. Drew and Shelly.
Is that true?
Yeah. We were a team.
We'd have never known.
We were a team.
We all three know the guy I'm talking about.
Hey,
and even I was like, dude, you killed somebody. You can't be drinking like this.
But he was
because
a weird case.
That's what you believe, and you've seen, and you've heard in 12-step meetings that once you kill somebody, then you won't go back.
Okay, I mean, that may be an extreme circumstance.
See, I think he got so depressed.
Yeah, it was depression.
It can flip on you. Yeah. The consequences could be so bad that you're just a lifer now.
Yeah,
that's right. You don't care.
Like, yeah, you have no. You're totally apathetic.
This is why it's so hard to get and stay sober. And we're just talking about how do people get sober. I think more people need to be kicked out of rehab and not indulged in all this.
Transferred
right? And money can't be the motivation. The reason why they're not getting kicked out is because that's a head on a bed, and a lot of times that's usually the highest paying person in the rehab. Cash pay.
But your county facilities aren't like that. They're not run like that.
There are
a waiting
no more
list.
County facilities anymore. There aren't.
Rena B's still there downtown.
What's that, Rena B's?
Yeah, Rena B.
It sounds like one of those weird diseases Drew tells me about on Loveline every third night.
No, they're getting rid of all, trust me, they're going to get rid of MusiCares. I was at a meeting about it.
Well, they might.
Obamacare is supposed to take care of everything. There will not need to be any cry helps and impacts unless they're going to go to a for-profit insurance-driven model. Ugh. There's no reasons for, I'm telling you, there's no reason eventually for MusiCares drug program because all people will have health insurance and go to Hazelden and everybody will
and
live happily ever after.
Get squeezed.
That's your Bernie Sanders bullshit.
I know. Yeah. Then they'll get squeezed down where nobody gets, you know, remember how great it is to have insurances? Terrible.
Terrible.
Right? So everyone
right
will have the same terrible insurance.
It's not as bad as it was 10 years ago when you were dealing with it. It's pretty good now. You can get rich taking insurance these days, but they're going to have all the power and they're going to turn that faucet off.
Of course.
For sure they are.
Especially with treating what we have.
Right.
You know, because there's no real mercy for us.
That's right. No one to advocate for
us. You know, everybody says, well, you did it to yourself ultimately. I think I say, no, I didn't.
I think the unmotivated and the
my
oppositionally
mom
defiant
my
should be
did
kicked
it.
Out. Kicked out.
Yeah. See this
and
necklace?
My brain.
And
my
the
problem.
Really willing, the clients Shelly likes so much, of which she has 1 out of 15 probably right now, that are just want it so bad and they'll do anything Shelly says. They don't need to be there either. They don't need to be there.
Yeah.
It's the people in contemplation that need to be, and all of treatment needs to be focused on breaking down denial, cognitive behavioral therapy on the contemplative people.
Yeah.
You can't mix all three populations together. Mm. It's madness. Mm. And we had that madness on Celebrity Rehab, and that was one of the entertaining things about it, but it's also one of the destructive things.
That's like
it.
It's like campaigning, honestly. Like the way you're looking at it, and it makes a lot of sense because you don't really want to focus on the people who are going to vote for you no matter what, and you certainly don't want to concentrate on the people that are not going to vote for you under any circumstances.
Exactly,
it's those people that are on the fence that you really got to appeal to. You know?
Yeah,
but again, the resistant ones interest me.
You like them.
I think I've broken through resistances. Like it's yes.
I wore down your interest in my resistance, and you didn't want
right.
to deal with me.
No, that's right. Well, I wasn't as good then.
He's like a weird alien.
Yeah, no, he was bad.
He really is.
Oh, he was bad in his day.
Yeah, listen, you guys should be unloaded with them. Hello.
Anytime Anthony Kiedis says, that guy's too dark for me. Yeah. Like, I can't party with him.
Yeah. No.
He's too intense.
Yeah.
Too
that's
intense.
Bob Forrest. Just think Bob.
You should have seen the crack. You should have seen us
on
the crack.
Did you guys use together?
Yeah,
all the time.
She stitched up my back when I got stabbed because I had a worn out for my arrest and didn't want to go to the hospital.
Duct tape. Duct tape. I swear to you, made butterflies with duct tape.
You never.
She made a butterfly bandage with duct tape.
Yes.
You cut out the little.
That's what I did. That's what I did. See, I was
Mother
Teresa.
I got stabbed, and I thought, who knows how to fix this? without going to a hospital. Shelly.
Shelly can figure Shelly's it out.
And, it's amazing how resourceful you become as a drug addict.
But like that's the craziness of drug addiction. Like, you're going to walk into an emergency room and they're going to call the police. Oh, you have a warrant out for drug possession.
Yeah. No, they're it's just the going to stitch up your you back. Live in. But I didn't even know that at the time. That's how effed up
but
I
you,
was.
But you didn't trust right? anything that was part of the
oh,
social
fabric. Oh, no. Don't go into... No. Yeah. No popo. No 5-0s. No fire department.
Nothing
don't
nothing
call.
With an office.
No.
Anything that involves
nothing.
An office.
Nothing official.
Yeah.
So nothing with official. An emblem.
But I don't think people, Shelly, know your history. Tell them
oh,
quickly.
Oh, they don't
your,
know yeah. that I got loaded with Bob Forrest?
No, no. I mean, you're quickly... You're,
My polysubstance addiction starting at like, hyperventilating was my first drug, hyperventilation. I learned how to do that when I was about sixth grade and perfect. Then I started to do that and then I fell and I had a consequence, hurt my nose, fell forward instead of backwards on the bed, oops, right into the dresser. Just,
oh, bam.
Then my mom's like, what are you doing? Nothing. You know, it already started right then. That's exactly, that's the whole
Mike's
thing.
Mike's wishing he would have thought of that. Look at him.
Oh, no, we used to do that. We used to do that one where, you know, you
grab
behind,
from behind.
And you breathe, then you blow it out as hard as you can, and then your friend would grab you from the, like, the sternum, and then we'd pass out.
It's
like,
crazy,
oh, so
this crazy footage of Steve-O being thrown to the ground after one of those episodes when he was using. Gosh. Yeah.
I used to pass out, like, using certain drugs. Like, GHB was a one where I would constantly drink it to the point that I would just fall over. Like, I got shot. Like, not, you know, the thing about, like, heroin or, like, the opiate-based pills is that there's, like, a gradual decline to passing out. I used to drink GHB, and I would use other substances, so my brain would be, like, alert. I'd be, like, you know, smoking rock. And be on key, but I was drinking this drug that would eventually shut my brain off, and I would be like talking to you and just go boom, you know. And I never really hurt myself. The only time I ever hurt myself, like falling over, I was taking a shit at my parents' house. I was like 14 and sober, and I was taking a shit for so long that my legs fell asleep, and I'd done like big squat workout the next day, the day before,
I went to get up.
Yeah, and it's my body rah, rah, like,
just went down.
I had little like linguine legs, and I smashed my head on the bathtub.
What's your exposure rate? What age?
Alcohol probably. What's seventh grade? Like 13, 12, 13?
12, 13. What's your show?
But I run
12.
I wasn't a kid who immediately when I got an inebriating substance in me, I was like, this is it.
So, Drew.
It wasn't until about 16 where I was like, I need to continually be inebriated.
Drew.
I was a blackout alcoholic by the time I was 17. I had to quit drinking.
When did the opiates start?
20. I went through phases where I went out.
She always had a job, if that matters. She always had a job.
You stay another hour.
It was so great. I am so classic, right? The trauma and then the early use and then more trauma. And then it went alcohol, weed, speed, crack, and then it went to opiates.
And how'd you support the habit?
I did this funny thing. I stole from my parents, but they didn't know that I was stealing from them. They thought
Bernie Madoff.
That's a difference. That's a difference in kids these days.
Yeah.
They don't care if they get caught. They steal the whole wad of money.
Yeah.
I would always, and Shelly would always, you just take what they won't notice.
Yeah. Don't alert them.
Shelly and Bob are like the old grizzled bank robbers in the movies. You see, like, the Humphrey Bogart would come in and tell, like, Jimmy Cagney's like, you're getting greedy, kid. You got to do it slowly. Yeah, or when De Niro comes up to the guy in Goodfellas, he's like, I told you not to be flashy with the money. You buy a pink Cadillac.
I told you. Yeah.
For sure. Yeah. That so those statements are true.
Well, and also, I bet you're right, but because they're kicked in like to hyperdrive with that motivation because of the pills and stuff. Like back in, I'm certainly an old timer because my first exposure to drugs and alcohol was alcohol and then weed. Like 99% of humanity until the last like 10 years where now kids are popping Norcos before they even think to blaze a joint.
Well, they're getting them from the emergency room when they break their arm. That's what they're getting
them. 12. Elvis was already on it, had his adenoids out, and he was high, and he was having fun and talking dreamy talk, and I was like, oh my God.
Ivy was on fentanyl at birth.
But let's the two parts of your history I want to quickly get out there. One is the Xanax withdrawal thing.
Oh yeah, so the post acute withdrawal that lasts like you're a cuckoo bird for like 2 years.
They thought she was psychiatrically. They put her in locked units.
It looks like benzo withdrawal looks like someone's cuckoo. Lost their mind.
I lost my mind. Yeah,
like
that
eat,
was
eat
true.
Your poo lost your mind. Yeah. Like you belong in a padded room.
Seriously, yeah. I was in Sears.
Eat your poo. Wait a minute. Eat your poo.
Just a hyperbole. A little poetic. Wait, license.
I don't mean
he's
that
talking
she,
literal.
I don't mean that she was literally eating the poo poo.
Yeah, I didn't do that.
No,
but it's crazy. Shit eating crazy.
Shit eating crazy.
I literally
or German.
I had so much. I had so many psychiatric symptoms that I was diagnosed I took Haldol, for God's sake. You know, I mean, Haldol's like
that
a heavy
worse,
duty. Yeah, it was terrible, yeah. Terrible. I was at Cedars. They were like, how'd you're bipolar, them, you're this, you're that. I just escaped from there.
How did they finally make the right diagnosis? Just in retrospect, you see that?
Just major depression. Disorder. Yeah. That's it.
Depression and drug addiction. That's what
but
I'm
no one
convinced.
Ever gave you any kind of barbiturate or Neurontin or anything that help
barbiturate.
They gave me lots of things, but the final thing was, yeah, I just needed the gabapentin. I mean, that's really all I needed was 900 milligrams of gabapentin. It could have cleared me right up, and I could have been not in the psych ward with a year of sobriety because I went cuckoo, right?
Yeah.
The benzos were brutal.
Do they make those drugs anymore?
Benzos?
No, obviously benzos, but I meant like the old school.
Oh yeah,
oh yeah.
I have a client on lithium. I just don't understand.
Lithium's
why.
Good.
Lithium's fine.
It's cheap.
You got to get blood checked all the time.
Yeah, but if you can't take
same with steroids,
Lamictal, it's very good.
It is good. I like Latuda now.
Oh, do you like it?
Yes.
Yeah, I wondered about
I
that.
I do. I like it.
We just went down.
Do you think that there's different types of trauma that trigger women versus men?
Yes.
I mean, we all know that there's a genetic undertone of addiction that comes with being born. But then also, do you think that there's, I feel like there's different types of trauma that really put men or women on the beeline to being like heavy users, you know?
Yes. I think men have a really hard time tolerating any kind of powerlessness in their youth, where they are systematically taken, their power is taken away from them.
Yeah.
I think that that causes so much problems. And I think that when they're
what kind of problems in adult? What kind of problems in adulthood?
Well, obviously the drug addiction.
Codependency.
And then codependency.
Oh, really? How about criminal behavior?
And then and your antisocial personality disorders. Because the powerlessness, they can't tolerate it. And that's what I see mostly when I'm working with guys, is that somebody depowered them.
Yeah.
At some age.
I'm totally with you.
And they depowered them, to which then they needed to compensate for that. So they have the shadow self back there in the self-destructive with the depowering.
Would helicopter momming, would that create a depowering?
No, that's empowered. That's falsely empowered. Falsely empowered.
It could go either way, right? Like Jason Waller, it was falsely empowered.
Yes.
If it becomes too intrusive, it's disempowering.
Right. Well, he's a special case because he was, I don't know his family background, but if he was falsely empowered and then being
TV
and almost impossibly handsome, so girls were probably walking, you know, walk
lying
over broken glass
feet.
to be with him. So that adds to it. And then he gets put on TV and, you know, gets that.
You know what's funny? Like, I have a lot of different handsome men friends. When you say it to Jason, he just acknowledges it. I think that's healthy that he acknowledges that he's a very attractive man. Yeah. I have other friends that are like, dude, what are you talking about? I'm not like the most handsome man in the world by most people's regulation. You tell me he's handsome, he just goes, oh, dude, come on.
Even if you're
fucking weird is that?
Even if you're insecure about it.
Is he a musician?
No, he's
even
an actor.
If you're insecure about it.
Oh, an actor.
You got to do that because nothing annoys me more than when you're like on a red carpet and like Megan Fox will walk by, like the most perfect looking person. And she's like, oh, you don't even understand. You should see me without makeup. And it's like, shut the fuck up. Like when Clooney's the best about it. They'll be like, you know, you got everything. He goes, oh, thank you very much. That's very nice of you to say. You know, like
solid ego. That's a healthy ego.
That's a healthy ego state, right?
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Let's talk about self-esteem for a second. These kids have too much self-esteem.
I agree.
What creates it?
Empowerment. It's not self-esteem.
I think low self-esteem is a healthy thing.
Yes.
It makes you take responsibility for things. Appropriate low self-esteem.
Yes.
It makes you take responsibility for things, and it makes you want to do better.
Not like me, like zero self-esteem.
Me too. So,
zero self-esteem, that's a really big problem.
Well, I think it also
Mike, where do you register on the self-esteem?
Low, but inappropriately low.
40 percentile?
I don't know. I wouldn't even have now. I mean, I'm much higher now than I ever was, but, you know, Shelley was talking about being depowered. Mm-hmm. And as a young guy, you know, Drew and I have talked about my sexual trauma and having an older woman kind of take
right.
my virginity. But I've always speculated that when I was like right around the same age, so yeah, it was maybe 6 months later, I got the shit beaten out of me, like to the point where my my survival instinct was kicking. Like I was like, oh my God, these guys are going to kill me. And it was like numerous guys. They were way bigger. They were older kids. And I got beat to the point like I didn't know how to go home without my parents going, oh, we got to take you to the emergency room. So I had to like run away essentially for like half a day.
Okay.
And I think that has stuck with me more.
Oh, yeah. Well, that and that near drowning thing, was that the same one?
Yeah.
Because I just felt it. And I went, have you had drowning or something? I had that weird thing I do sometimes.
Yeah.
And he was like, oh, yeah, the kids held my head underwater. I was like, oh, geez.
It's that stuff that happens at those certain ages where it just lodges in your brain and you're different. You're just different from that point forward. You are just different.
And we got to wrap this up, but quickly.
Oh, no.
I know.
It went by
fast. Tell the surgery story is the other thing I like people to hear.
Oh, the surgery, yes. I had surgery, and it was an emergency. I had 4 years of sobriety, and I had to go in. I didn't have preparation because I, you know, whatever. We don't talk about Kaiser and, you know, how they do things. But I had to go into emergency surgery. They cut me open. I woke up loaded on opioids, however, not high. Not high because I was in abject terror. When they cut your stomach and everything, it's like painful.
You don't have to tell me, Haina.
Oh, Rudy came back.
I got shanked many times. You know, my guts all over my legs.
Oh, shit.
It hurts really bad for a long time. So they gave me morphine and blah, blah, blah. But I woke up and I was literally like, I need more. Right away, I need Dilaudid. Oh, would you give me morphine? No, I need Demerol. No, I was just like controlling. I was like, I need this. I need that.
Knowledgeable
I
client.
Need this.
Well, but also like bullshitting too. Like, when was your last shot? I don't know, 4 hours ago.
Yeah, it's
like,
just completely. I was glued to the clock. Right.
So,
I had the thing.
So she
in my
was
arm,
in
glued
fully
to the clock.
In her disease.
When is my next shot? Is all I cared about. I didn't want my husband there. This is what's great. I didn't want my husband there at the time. I didn't want my family there. I wanted to pull the curtains. I wanted to watch TV. If I had Captain Crunch, I would have been eating it. For 4 days, I was deep in. And they had to literally come and just extricate me.
And you were aware that you were back in it.
I was aware.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was nasty. It was nasty. And I was mean. You know, just like I left off, Bob. Remember, we would get mean. Mm-hmm. Like at the end, we would be like we called them the heroin meanies because you would just get nasty.
You had to
like,
look out for yourself.
It was weird. You just get nasty. And I was just nasty.
Heroin meanies.
That's a terrible Little League team, the heroin meanies.
All right, we got to wrap this up. Shelly, you're welcome back anytime.
Oh, please, let me come back.
Mike, thanks for visiting. We're doing a separate podcast with you.
Ba-da-da-da-da.
And anything you want people to know? Find you anything?
Find me?
You're too busy, so I don't send you more patients.
Well, I'm going to have ShellySprague.com up and running, okay?
Right.
I've had this.
SPRAGUE.
SPRAGUE. I'm going to have that up and running, and I want to do some blogging on like what I talk about. You know, like my, you know, everything boils down to one
molecule.
Genetic molecule, dopamine.
I'm going to have to teach you all about the biology of that molecule.
I'm so excited. See, Drew, I owe my whole, all of this, I owe to you. You got me started in the brain, and I have not let up since. I love the brain. I am so excited about it. Who knew? I was shooting dope with Bob, but I'm actually a good scientist.
See?
Yeah.
I didn't know.
Well,
you were
experimental scientist at that point.
Yes,
of
exactly.
All the people on the earth.
Okay.
Right. This Life Podcast on Twitter. Da 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 da.
Well, thislovepodcast.com also we have, don't we? Or do we not?
Just Twitter.
Yes, we do.
Oh, we do.
Yeah. follow us on Twitter. Follow us at drdrew.com.
Google us.
Click through on Amazon, please.
My number is 213-804-3843. That's 213-804-3843. Because people need help, Drew. We got to get the message out.
He has two phones.
I have two phones. That's
okay. And we click through the Amazon banner that supports this show so we can keep doing it. It turns out we need a new computer to be able to run this thing. Turns out.
Donations.
Yeah.
Anyone?
Right. I want to remind people that today's episode is courtesy of Rocky Mountain Treatment Center. And please support the people that support the show. We do try to have people worthwhile.
Tell your friends.
Yeah, worthwhile people to advertise in this program.
All
see you
right.
next time.
You're a soul fire, shining brighter than the sun rising, breaking through the clouds, and I'm a wallflower, craving all of your attention. And when
I'm a part.